All right, here we go. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Liars, murderers, and thieves. My name is Jared, and with me, the werewolf himself, Ian.
That's me.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Today, we are settling in at the feature table to have a discussion about social deduction games. We will mention several in this line, share some of our experiences, and discuss the impact they can have on a game night. It's your turn. I know mine's a little bit shorter than it usually is.
All right, I'm done staring into the camera. Okay, anyway, it's all about lies, alliance, and a little bit of chaos. You might be a hero, you may be a villain, or you might be a lone wolf, but no one can know for sure. Read the room, trust no one, and use every clue to uncover or conceal the truth. You must hide in the shadows and keep your mission a secret. The player or players who deceive their opponents have the best chance of victory. Let's discuss deduction games.
Hey, Ian.
Yes.
I am not the werewolf.
Yeah, you are. Always. You're always the werewolf.
Almost never.
Almost always.
No.
Yes.
No, that's a lie that you fill people's minds with just to get me out of the game.
It's totally true, though. You're hiding it so well.
It's garbage.
You're hiding it so well.
It's unbelievable, really.
Well, I don't know about that.
All right, Ian. Question time. Time for, well, confession time, I believe, is what we're really doing here.
That's right.
What's the biggest lie you've ever told in a game?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm assuming we're probably talking about some type of social deduction game.
No. I'm across the board. Any game that you've ever played, what's the biggest lie?
That's a big question, bro.
Well?
Man. I mean, do you have one off the top of your head?
I sure do.
You didn't prepare me.
I'm actually going to cheat a little bit. What I played was not a board game.
Of course, you'd be cheating when answering this question.
Sure, of course. It was not a board game. I think I've referenced this on the podcast before, but Josh Taylor was running a real life, and I put that in quotation marks, a real life survivor game at his parents' house.
Oh, wow.
And I remember there was a group of us that had made an alliance, and it got down to where it was the five of us and like one other dude. And we needed to get I can't remember the exact details, but we needed the fifth guy in our group that was quickly going to be betrayed to do this thing for us. And then he was out. And I remember like straight to his face, I was just like, yeah, man, totally behind you. You and I have got this. We're going to go all the way with it. Totally sold it. I'd sold my soul right there. And sure enough, I betrayed him shortly thereafter.
Wow. Look at you.
It was a
you
time.
Jerk.
Yeah, that's true. I felt no remorse. Still feel no remorse, but it is what it is.
That's good, I guess. I'm probably not. But anyway. I think
he totally bought it too, which made it worse. That makes it better.
I mean,
it depends on your perspective.
Yeah. I mean, as far as a game to any extent like this, I think it would have happened in a social deduction game. I do remember a very specific one, and there might have been, I don't know, I'm just not remembering exactly right now, but there was a game of the Resistance that I was playing, and we'll probably mention that again later if you don't know what this is, but it's a social deduction game.
Makes sense.
I was a bad guy, and I had played everybody at the table because I didn't really do anything suspicious for most of the game. I kind of played along with the good side.
Yeah.
And we get down to like the last round, and it's basically like it's tied 50-50. Whoever wins the last round will claim the victory. And I'm like, I'm just selling it now. I've got everybody in the palm of my hands just. And so I get like half the table convinced that, you know, hey, we should pick this group of people. At the very end, you know, they start arguing about, okay, you know, should we pick, I forget who it was across the table, but my brother who was sitting next to me, and I was like, bro, like you gotta, to pick this guy. Like, he's good. He's been doing good, like, the entire game. Like, he's not, he's, trust me, he's good. And he's like, why? Like, how do you know? And I was like, trust me, I know. I got you.
This is, like, red flag territory for sure. I would be nominating you so fast.
Yeah, no, well, that's what I'm saying. I've been picking everybody the right way. Like, I just played it right. And so nobody suspected me.
Okay.
And so in this game, in Resistance, like, you don't have to, like, if you're the bad guy, it's not always about, like, you messing everything up. It's about making sure the teams get picked that are unbalanced and have more bad guys than good.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, you only just need one bad guy to be in it. And so the whole table was like, oh, yeah, okay, so this guy's been doing good, this guy's been doing good, this guy's been doing good. And my teammate, I, again, convinced the table to pick him after all this conversation. I was like, guys, like, he's clean, I promise you. And again, he's been clean for most of the game, but I just found a way to get this guy in. And I was like, okay, you guys, we got this. We got this team. Yep. We got this. And so then you flip the little tiles over and they get to the last one and it's like a failure. And it's like, flip it over. And I'm
somehow
like,
somehow it's always the last one.
There you go. Got them. After all this work, like the entire game, I just stayed undercover. I finally got them to, because they trusted me enough to be like, what do you think about this? And I was like, I think it was like Alex or something. I was like, yeah, Alex is clean. Absolutely. Like he's been on a mission 3 times. Nothing's failed.
Yep.
Boom, got him. And the whole time, yeah, so it was so good. I mean, that's what you want in a game like this, is this epic moment towards the end when nobody suspected you to be the villain.
Sure.
Or the good guy, I guess. But usually it's the villain. The villain's a harder game to play, is that you got to be very undercover. And so I ripped the rug out from under them right on the last second. They had no clue what was happening to them.
Incredible.
So,
incredible.
Yeah. That was it. And they, I'm sure somebody asked me, like, are you the bad guy? I was like, oh, no.
Not me.
Why would I be the bad guy? I've passed every mission.
Do you have anyone in your group that you just, without fail, you know you can trust? Like, you can almost read them immediately, and you're like, I know this person well enough.
Yeah. I mean, my brother, I can usually pick out pretty good.
Okay.
And, like, we're oftentimes on the same team in these games, so, like, we have the confidence in each other. But, yeah, I do know when – I feel like I know when he's lying. Or he probably knows when I'm lying, too. It's just that's how it goes. Yeah. You don't want us on opposite teams. It doesn't work.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are my questions. Do you have any opening questions, or are you just – not gonna entertain that part of it?
I guess my question is, as we kind of dig into this a little bit, so do you prefer like a large scale social deduction where there's not really much of a game, or because I've played like a bunch of different types of those games and we'll talk about some, or do you prefer like a quick social deduction that's 10 minutes and you kind of figure it out with like cards and things like that with an actual game?
That's interesting. I really think it depends on the experience. So if we're in a situation where I want to get a lot of gaming in, then obviously I don't want to play Werewolf or something that's going to take a long time because it's just going to consume too much of the evening.
Yeah.
I think I do honestly prefer the shorter social deduction games anyways.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I get my fill in 30 minutes instead of 3 hours sometimes.
Sure.
So it just feels like I'm like, I did the thing and it went a lot faster than if we had done this. Now, I will say for me that like do love those epic moments of getting to the point towards the end where things really start to come together. And you don't get that in the smaller games, right? Like you don't get that in Coup. And you do sometimes, but it's very quick. It's not, there's no build up to it.
No.
And so it's one of those things where I don't think the trade-off's worth it, but every once in a while I'm game to jump in and have that experience. But it's more, it feels like almost like one of the more epic board games where I need time dedicated to this is what we're doing, and that's all we're doing.
Right. Yeah, no, I think generally I like the shorter game style. Like I do love moderating some Werewolf, but I think playing for myself as well, I think I enjoy that kind of shorter game span And I think it still has the same effect. You still get the same type of interactions as a table.
Yeah.
And that kind of like, oh, like, whoa, you were the, you know, I don't know, werewolf or whatever. Like, you still get that.
But in way less time.
Yeah, way less time, doesn't take as much. You know, player elimination's severely limited in those style of games, where if you have the large, bigger games, you're talking about player elimination. And so, like, it just, you know, there's a positive and a negative to each of these. But I think generally, I think I like that smaller format.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Okay, well, Ian, let's talk about a few of them that we experienced. And you know what? Before we do that, everybody has a origin story for how they get into something.
Origin story.
You know, we all have our board game tale of how we first played a board game and then fell in love and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But specifically, I feel like specifically within social deduction games, there's this, for some of us, there's this weird thing that happens where we played it without even realizing we played it. And we come back years later and we're like, oh, I've already played this. Like, I've done this before. I thought it was just a youth group activity.
Exactly.
So we'll kind of talk about our origin story a little bit for this specific genre. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. Yeah, so the first version of social deduction game that I played was, it was called Mafia,
yep.
Which is very similar to Werewolf. But we played with a deck of cards, and everybody was dealt. It was funny, it was in high school, and we were serving food this event, but we like had a bunch of time beforehand, and so like a bunch of us dudes and teenagers, you know, have found a deck of cards in the back room, and so we're like in the closet like playing Mafia and
in the closet. That's hilarious.
I think that's what it was. It was like a closet. And we're like, it's like, hey guys, I know this game, let's play this,
let's go murder each other in the closet.
So like, yeah, we, you know, the dealing deck of cards, and like I think we just played like the queen is like the healer,
yeah.
And like stuff like that. I don't even remember exactly all the rules to Mafia comparatively, but yeah, I mean, that was the first thing. We're set playing at a table, and you know, we kind of passed the moderator around. They would go each round, and I remember very vividly losing most games because I didn't know what I was doing, and also know like what is everybody, how do they play, like who's
yeah.
who. When you first play those games, it's, when you play with a new person, it's really challenging, and that's, I do remember that. I was like, I don't know. What do I do? Like, what was happening? So, but yeah, Mafia in the closet at
perfect,
you know, a serving event that we were, I don't know, something. So, yeah, nonprofit stuff.
Well, there's your first clip to share on YouTube and Instagram. That's for sure.
The closet Mafia ordeal.
That's right. So, mine was similar. I was introduced to Mafia through card playing, like you were, and that sort of thing. Just deck a card to assign a few roles. Very simple.
Yeah.
But then I think what really, like, the card game was fine. You know, it's kind of whatever. But then when we would do lock-ins at the church, we would play Killer, which,
okay.
I don't know if you've played Killer or not.
No, but
so
probably similar.
Killer's great. It's the same idea. You go ahead and deal out the cards and assign people roles, but instead of sitting on a circle and playing, you're like actively walking around the church in the dark or whatever building you have.
Yeah.
And whoever the killer is.
You go around and tap people. Is that right?
Well, we played it where you had to run your hand across the throat. And it takes a little bit more time, which is key, because if anyone spots you doing this, they're going to be able to know that you're the one.
Yeah.
And so when you convene to vote off who we think is the killer, you're exposed. You're, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, so that's what we would play, and that was super fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that was my introduction. You know, obviously a little bit more intense than when we sit down around the circle, but, you know, at the same time, I've had some interesting werewolf games as well that have gotten very intense.
Yeah. No, I think my next exposure would have been Werewolf, and so then I ended up purchasing a copy of the ones that have, like, the Ultimate Edition has so many cards, so then I started moderating a lot.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
I was just going to say, we played the Resistance so much more than we played Werewolf, just because of how much faster it went.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we played that a lot early on. Like, we'd still play Werewolf, but that was more for, like, when we got 20 plus people together. And we're like,
yeah,
we're
resistance is good up to 12, I believe. So sure. Anything below 12, you're golden for that. Werewolf, right. I often had times of plus 10, plus 12, and so at that point.
Sure.
Continue on with werewolf.
Yep. No, that makes sense. So anyways, that's our little intro. So Ian, let's talk about a few games that we've experienced in this hobby, or in this genre, excuse me, that we like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've already talked about a couple. So as far as like overall, it's always challenging to, I guess our guide here is any type of like bluffing style social deduction in a way. I guess one of them I know we're going to discuss isn't like truly social deduction. It's just kind of this bluffing deduction sure. game. So I guess there are a lot in that vein. I'll touch on, and I'll kind of start there, and then we'll kind of go to the larger scale. That's what okay. I'm going to do.
Sure.
So Bang the Dice Game is one that is very quick. And honestly is based off the original Bang the card game, which I think that the card game is fine, but you're dealt a role, sheriff, deputy, renegade, outlaw, and so you're given these roles and they're all hidden. And the dice game is the same, but the card game, you know, it was a little messy. It was very slow. It took forever, especially with a large game. You could play up to 8, and it's just messy. It was kind of choppy play, and the cards flow didn't work really well. It was like the classic draw one card, and then you got like nothing. You're like hoping to get a draw 3. You know, I don't love games like that where you're just hoping for like a good card.
Mm-hmm.
I want a little bit more than that. Because even attacking was all like, you have to have a card to attack. If not, you're screwed, so... But then they came out with the dice game, and the dice game had a similar aspect. You have the roles, so you have the sheriff, deputy, renegade, outlaw, blah, blah, blah. But you are now, your turn, you're given a character, but then you're given dice. And you just chuck some dice, and that you can either get to attack people, heal yourself or other people, or, you know, try and do a couple other little things. But the main thing is to try and deduct who's who based off who they're shooting, how they're talking, you know, what kind of... how close they are to the sheriff, you know, what is their actions been in the game so far. And so that's a very similar experience to all that. But I do think Bang the Dice Game is a better version of that. That's really what I'm talking about here is the dice game. And you just have so many different roles inside of it. They all have little special abilities. You know, there are characters that roll like the attacks better, and there are some that are kind of heal a lot better. And so you get all these different wide range of abilities that very much replicate what the card game did, but it very simplifies it into this dice style. Again, you can play up to 8 player, I think 7 or 8 players, and literally it takes like 15 minutes would be like a long game. And so I just love that aspect of that. I still bring it to all the events. They even have an expansion for it that I recently got as well. And so it adds a couple more dice, which is kind of cool. And so I think overall, it's just one of those games that it has the deduction, has dice, obviously everybody loves dice, but you're able to kind of quickly go through this social experiment, and I think it's fun. So that's one that I always kind of add to a list like this, because it's not large scale, but it's small enough and has that deduction aspect to it that not a lot of games have.
I really enjoyed Bang the Dice Game just because it wasn't Bang, and there were so many people that liked Bang, and Bang was one of those that took way too long to play for what it was. And I was like, man, you get this experience in like 15 minutes, and it's pretty much what Bang is. And
that's
so I was happy with that. One for me. So I'm going to start by going in a little bit of a different direction, Ian.
Oh, okay.
So we have a lot of deduction games that cause strife and anger because we're all working against each other.
Okay.
But sometimes we have deduction where we're working together.
Okay.
Much like in Mysterium. So... Yes. If you've played Dixit, Dixit is all about trying to figure out what people are looking for within an image.
Yes.
And Mysterium takes that and puts this like spooky theme on it and has one character play the ghost. And they are trying to guide the rest of the table through this little journey. And everything is done by taking these super artistic cards and that have multiple meanings that you could pull out of it depending on what you're looking for. And they are trying to set it up in such a way that the rest of the table can figure it out. And so the table is, you know, having to discuss what's going on in this guy's head, or girls, and is just trying. It's an interesting experience, and there's multiple different levels to it and lots of different setup and that sort of thing as far as what it could be, as well as different difficulties and things like that. So I really enjoyed our experience of that and the times that we've gotten to play it. I think it's my favorite version of that Dixit. I don't know what else you call it other than the Dixit style.
Yeah, it's Dixit Universe.
Yeah.
And they have others as well. I think Muse is one as well. And I think they have Mysterium Park, which is a similar aspect.
Yeah, I was
going to
say Mysterium's got
one.
Several different things going on.
I've always
on
wanted
it.
To play Mysterium. I love that aspect of that. I would love to be the ghost.
You would love it. I 100%.
I've many, many times thought about purchasing. I hate to say this, but I do think it's quite expensive.
It is.
It's like even like a used copy is expensive. Yeah. I'll like go to like, you know, we have a McKay's here. It's like I'll go to McKay's and it's still like $60. I'm like, dude, I'm not paying a used copy for full price. It's never on sale as much as I would like. The game's older now, and eventually I'll get it, but if I find a good deal on it, I don't need a bunch more of these games, so it's not on the top of the list to purchase.
Sure.
But that's a gripe that I have with that. But no, the artwork, fantastic. I've seen the game laid out. I think it's really, really cool. I love Dixit. I have a whole thing. I'll just collect Dixit cards.
I know, I love
the art. So it fits into that realm. But there's other games, Muse and Mysterium Park as well. There's a couple in that genre. I think it's technically, they'll say like a Dixit game, and they have some other ones as well. So those are all really good. Mysterium's great. I mean, highly ranked as well. People do love that game. I think it's really good.
So I just wanted to throw that one out there, because there are lots of different kinds of social deduction for sure.
Sure. No, and I think I'll mention this other one too. This is another kind of small game. I don't know if you were going to talk about Love Letter at all.
No, go for it.
Yeah, so Love Letter is another one. Again, it's like a 5-minute game, but you are kind of deducting what other people have, and some of the ones you actually have like a role, and so you're trying to, get through the process of a round trying to hide who you are. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit more of a mention as another style deduction game that you are trying to figure out, okay, who are they? What are they playing? And my favorite is the Batman one. I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure out, okay, is he the Joker? Does he have the Joker? The way he's playing, it seems like he has the Joker. He's not. And so game like takes, I'll play through a game in 3 minutes, rounds. And then it takes like, 10 minutes to get through a whole game because you're trying to score points. But it is fun. You're just kind of quickly deducting. That's a quick, very, very quick deduction game where you're just trying to figure out who's who. So based on their actions and how they're playing. So that was a quick mention. I saw that pull up on here, and I think that's a good one to mention here along these lines as we get into some of these ones that are probably a little bit more of a time investment.
For sure. All right, next one for me, we've mentioned quickly before, so I'll mention quickly again, One Night Ultimate Werewolf. I love games that go from needing someone to run the show to running it automatically, and I very much take on the role of moderator in a normal werewolf game, which we'll talk about later, both because I want to and because I feel like I need to. And so to have an experience like this where you can just have the app run the game for you and it brings just enough chaos where it's a good laugh and it's short enough that none of the chaos feels so overwhelming that we can't just reset and do it again.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of different versions of One Night at this point.
Oh
so
my
you can
gosh,
kind of pick,
yes, there is.
You know, if you're into werewolves or vampires. Or aliens, whatever aliens. It may be. I'm looking on, there's
is
all
that
kinds.
The four? Vampire, alien, werewolf, and then two versions of the werewolf. Was there another as well? Golly.
I don't know. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, there is.
I'm having to click too many buttons.
Since you mentioned this, I will talk about this one, is that I think this is a game that takes that werewolf aspect of trying to figure out who is the werewolf based on things going on, and it condenses it into a 5-minute game. And I think that's what you're really looking for in a lot of these, and I think this does it so masterfully. It is hard to play, in my opinion, with a larger group because you have to reach around the table. I think this game is really good at, like, five or six.
Oh, no way.
Really?
You can play this game at 10. It becomes a stand-up game. Everybody has to stand up.
Yeah. I hadn't played with that many. I ended up playing more of the other social deduction games at that high of count. I just wasn't a big fan of it at that high. It felt like it was really hard to really come up with any substantial guesses, in my opinion, but maybe I just wasn't playing right.
The other ones were superheroes and supervillains, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just because.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it's a great game. I just don't, if I'm going up past like 6 to 7, 8, I'm like looking at another game. One of the ones that I will mention later, if I'm doing true like social deduction like that.
Sure.
But I do, I mean, I've played that with my family many, many times. We loved it at like 5 or 6. Like, it's just enough to like basically find one person and you had got to lie your way through it. That was an experience, yeah, like we kind of talked about where I, you know, you can come up with some really good lies. And kind of deceive kind of the table into thinking that something else happened. And you're like, I saw him do it. So I think it's cool. No, it's a great game though. Absolutely.
Nice. Okay. What you got?
A game that is really on the top of my list when it comes to these games. And it's a game that I actually purchased not too long ago. Probably a little over a year ago, but the game's been out a while. Deception, Murder in Hong Kong. And that game came out in 2014, so it's been out a long time. I just never got around to playing it, and I remember when it came out. But it's very well done. And my favorite thing about this game is it takes that aspect of social deduction and kind of puts it in this, really its own category, in my opinion. Like, the way it plays is just so different than other games that I've played. And it has the aspect of the clue giver, similar to Mysterium. And they're kind of like the knower of the murderer. They saw the murderer basically commit, you know, the act. And let's say, you know, you have a whole table. Let's say we have like 10 people. And it plays up to 12, I believe. So you have a table of 10, and each player will be given five, basically, they count them as like either items or like weapons or things that look like weapons. And then some things are just like household items, kind of. I forget what they actually term them inside the game. And I'm trying to remember what they are. But anyway, you're given, you know, these cards in front of you. And you have basically, I think it's 10. You end up with 10 cards or 8 cards in front of you of these two types. And including the murderer, who is given a card amongst all of these players. And basically, your role as the table is to figure out who the murderer is, but you are given clues by the clue giver, and basically they're given these little tiles that are, you know, a murder location. Let me say, like, the swimming pool or the hotel, and you know, motive. You'd like, okay, they had it was aggressive in nature, or body signs of the victim, like they had blunt trauma, or, you know, they look like they drown or whatever. And you have to, as the clue giver, you're kind of piecing together these icons every round, every like, and it's like 5 to 10 minutes that you let the table discuss, which I think is the most fun thing to watch. It's also the most frustrating thing, because you can't say anything other than take this little bullet and you put it on one of the words on one of these tiles, and you're only given 5 tiles, so you have to pick. And so you're just watching the table and you're kind of reading what they're doing. But as the table trying to figure out who the murderer is, the clue giver will give that, you know, icon. Let's say they say they was at the hotel, and then they said they looked like they drowned, or they look like they had burn marks. So then you're looking at all the players, like everybody's looking at, like, picking out these items and trying to connect something back to that card or the tile that you gave this clue. And what people's brains do, in my opinion, this game, like, it takes it to a whole other level of process of thought. And you're trying to get like one or two people to like get on the same page as you, especially as the clue giver. And you're just like, okay, like, please think about the pool, think about the ladder, and think about he got hit with blunt force trauma. I don't know. Like, you're like trying to make these crazy claims because you only have so many options as the giver, or the clue giver. And you're like, I need somebody to realize that, you know, I don't know, like, whatever, like the chain and the scissors are connected somehow, and those are the weapons. So basically, after like these rounds of play, the players as a table have to pick a person, and actually each individual person gets to vote as well. But you have to pick a person, and then you pick one of the red cards and then one of the blue cards that you think is the murderer and what they used to murder somebody with. And so, again, this table, the lying, the deceit, the just pivoting, trying to say, oh, well, like, and you're trying to, like, find every possible way that those things could connect them to the murderer weapons. It's just so good. Like, I think this is my favorite of them. I don't know how long we were going to talk about this, so I just thought this was an appropriate time to talk about this game.
That's good, because I'm curious. You need to show me this game sometime.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I played it at a getaway with, I think it was like four couples, and then some of them had kids, some of them didn't. And it took three or four games for everybody to find, okay, what, like, the people could not figure out who the murderer is for the first three games. So there was a little bit of a learning curve for the table. Everybody was still in, they were like, oh my God, though, it was like, I was so close. Like, I knew it. And by the end, we played it like three nights in a row. We played like three games one night, three games the next night. Like, everybody was locked in after like two games or two nights. And they're like, okay, they were like, I have to win this game. Like, we have to. They like just kept dying to play it. And I was like, this is what you want. Like, also, like, when you lose and you're like, okay, I got one of the weapons right. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, what a horrible defeat. You're like, I knew who it was, and I got one of them right, but I couldn't figure out the other one. And so there's these just massive, like, emotional swings as well of trying to figure out who it is and who the murderer is. So, yeah, I think you would really like it as well. It does take a little bit of a learning curve for the table. But then once, like, everybody kind of figured it out, it almost like they got it every round. And so then you can add a little bit more. You kind of have, like, a witness. Mm-hmm. And you had these, like, other abilities that kind of, like, get to peek at the table. You have, like, an accomplice, and so you can make it even harder or easier on specific people. We just played the basic game for, like, most of the time. And, again, just having this option of, one, like, the social aspect of, like, everybody's talking and discussing is really what drives social deduction games, is that conversation that is in this game. And then you also have this game aspect. You have to figure out who it is,
right,
based off, like, the clue giver and trying to connect it. But then on top of that, you have to figure out two specific things in front of that player. I think it's either eight or 10 cards in front of them that you have to pick two of. And so it's quite a challenge. It's a challenge, especially early on if you've not played before. And it looks like it's only four, so you have a total of eight cards. But still, it's like, man, it's just challenging. It's a challenging, fun game, and it doesn't last super long. You know, most games took about 30 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not anything crazy. We played multiple games.
That's a lot, like, that you get done in half an hour. That's crazy.
Yeah, because I think you have a timer. I can't remember if there's a timer actually in the box or not, but I do know, like, you're basically given so much time, and you have five kind of cue tiles that you have to pick from. And so, like, as the clue giver, you can kind of give one to start the game. And then every time you give another one, that gives everybody an opportunity to discuss. And then you kind of, like, listen to them. And then if you think the conversation's going a weird way, you add another one. And throughout the game, everybody gets one vote, including the murderer. And so the murderer will use that as a tool to kind of divert the attention away from them or put it on somebody specifically. I remember doing that, and I think I was the murderer, and I was like, guys, like, it's very clear. Like, this person drowned, and they used the rubber duck in the pool to I don't know, you know, you just start making up stuff. And so that was a really cool, like, experience. So, like, you're trying to use it, but everybody gets one vote, and that's the thing. Everybody gets one. So that's the thing. Oh, that's what I want to mention. It's everybody's, like, if they're all focused on one guy and everybody votes, they use their one vote to try and get the murderer. If it all fails, then the murderer wins. So the games can kind of have a variability in length depending on how aggressive people are and they're using their vote. But the aspect of you're kind of working with your teammates that you think are teammates to use your votes accordingly, like, okay, like, hey, I'll vote and pick those two items if you vote for them, and pick the other two. And so it's a true social deduction. Like, it is very, very social.
Interesting.
In the most of terms of social deduction games.
Yeah.
I found that this one has that massive kind of back and forth tension. Like, it is huge tension because you get one vote. You know, in Werewolf and these other games, like, you kind of vote every round unless you die. there's no dying in this game. Everybody's at the table still. But if you use your vote early, you really now you have to convince everybody else of your opinion because you've lost your vote now. So now it's you trying to convince somebody to believe you again, if even though you voted already. So it's fascinating. Very, yeah. Very good. One of my favorites that I've played of the genre. And yeah, highly recommend. Again, I think it's one of the better ones out there. These are all really good, obviously, that we discussed. But I think that one's just so, so excellent. It was done over 10 years ago, which is crazy to me that a game, and it's still, people love it.
You know, it's interesting thinking about what's still on the list that I could mention. I just have noticed a trend. Like, most of the games we're talking about are older. And I don't know if it's because this genre got burnt out or if it's just like once you've made it, there's only so many different ways to make it.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting because most of this hobby, the parts get recycled and reused a lot. And I think you're starting to see this get to be more of it's part of the game instead of the whole game. Like, I think the hobby in some ways is moving away from the classic, this is the thing. And if you really want the thing, you're just going to play Werewolf or now Blood on the Clock Tower, which I'll mention in just a minute.
Yeah.
So
that's true. I don't know how many newer games of the genre are coming out. I mean, we obviously looked before this recording of some other games in the genre, and there's not a lot. There are other games, but I just don't know how much traction they get. Maybe it's a situation where it needs to be out a while for people to kind of get the hang of them, or
sure.
I don't know. Like, it's very interesting on how the games end up with that, but you know, overall, like, you look at some, you know, there are some others, but a lot of, yeah, I'm looking at a list now, like, there's just a lot that are older, and
sure.
There's not any, you know, newer ones. A lot of them are definitely over 10 years old. Mysterium would be one that would be close. Like, Mysterium Park is kind of like probably the most recent of any of them.
Yeah, but even Mysterium is a decade old.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's just so much that are older in the genre. I'm maybe excited for a potential different thing. I guess there is, I think and I could be wrong on this, Mansions of Madness has the option of a possible betrayer. And so, and I think one of them, I could be wrong on that, but, and so there's that aspect there, but I think in general, like, it's just, it was overdone, I think, quite often, and
sure,
doesn't have the same games being released about in that same genre anymore.
I mean, there are a couple on this, on a list that I found that I'm interested to try that are newer, that I haven't had a chance to yet, so I can't really speak to those, but even the one is like, oh yeah, this was like inspired by the Resistance, or, you know, so they're still pulling from that aspect, which is fine.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not against that. But again, you only need so many in one collection.
Yeah, exactly.
So especially when you don't get to them that often. But I'm going to mention a couple more very quickly. Do you have any more on your list that you want to get to tonight?
No, you go ahead and I'll see if there's any I need to add to it.
Before I get to Blood on the Clock Tower, and I keep mentioning it because it's like, I feel like Blood on the Clock Tower is this, we're going to take Werewolf and just run with it to another level. So that's why I'm kind of kicking that to the end. But one I wanted to throw in that's also older, but it's just such a fun experience. And it flies in the face of everything I've said so far about deduction games. Battlestar Galactica is a 3-hour experience where you get to basically relive life on Galactica.
Yeah.
Full stock with, you don't know who's who. Like, you are a character from the show. You're working on Galactica, which is falling apart. Crises are happening all over the place. There's all these things you got to take care of. And I have not, and I might be speaking in ahead of myself a little bit, but as far as I can think through, I don't know of a better hidden traitor mechanic than the way BSG pulls it off. Because in this game, there are two halves to the game. In the first half, you could have some people who are Cylons. You could have one Cylon, or you could have zero Cylons. So in the first half of the game, you could all be working together, all hunky-dory, everything's going great. And then all of a sudden, two people find out, or however many people it is, depending on your player count, oh boy, all of a sudden we want to destroy everything. Or it could have been that way from the beginning. But they played the first half so well that it's like, I don't know what's going on. And it just, there is such tension in that. And I feel more tension in that game playing a board game. The only other one that came close was when we knew we had a betrayer in Dead of Winter. And we're like, I don't know who it is, but like they're ready to sabotage us kind of thing. There's something really unique about that tension when you're all working together to try and complete a goal, but you know that not everybody is actually doing that.
Yeah.
And again, Battlestar Galactica was by far the best experience at that. It's almost not even fair for me to like bring it up because that game's out of print, but FFG did do a remake in the Arkham Horror world of Unfathomable that is available. From what I understand, they did a pretty good job of sticking to all the mechanics of it. So the mechanics work really well, but I don't know if you've watched Battlestar Galactica and understand the tension in the show, like they are able to recreate that in a way that I'm not sure you can in a different genre. Like it's just built for that game. So anyways, gotcha. So wanted to mention Dead of Winter, which we've already reviewed, but games like that, where it's that semi-cooperative, we're all working together, but we're not, and you don't know who's not. And I think that's a fun aspect that I personally really enjoy.
Gotcha. So is Unfathomable similar in that? Oh, it's a re-implementation.
The structure is there. It's a different theme.
It's the Cthulhu thing.
It's that Arkham Horror style. I mean, Battlestar Galactica came out 2008. So the game is definitely dated and probably got cleaned up a little bit in Unfathomable. Obviously, I haven't played that one. But, man, it's an experience.
In Battlestar Galactica, you were actually characters from the show.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
That's got fandom on it as well.
It does.
I didn't watch Battlestar Galactica, but I've always wanted to play that game, never played it because of that. And I think it's a neat, I mean, the theme looks great. So even if I didn't even watch the show.
I don't think you have to watch the show. Like, I think there's an extra level of fun and like cool if you have watched the show.
Right.
But I mean, it's sci-fi. Robots are trying to kill humans and they can look like humans. Like, it's pretty easy to pick up what's going on.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, I would be willing to try the Unfathomable because I want to try this game. So I think overall, you know, you mentioned Dead of Winter. Are you going to talk about that one at all? Or
I think we already have. Like, we've talked about Dead of Winter before. So it just kind of falls in that same semi-co-op.
It is the semi-co-op. I love the aspect of having, you know, you're trying to figure out. You don't know, but you're trying to figure out, especially if somebody, you know, sabotages a turn, then you're like, okay, I can't trust anybody anymore.
Yeah, once a turn doesn't go well, then it's just...
Then you're like, I trust no one now. Like, I was kind of trusting you, like, I believed in you, like, I knew that you would do your job for the colony, but now that somebody messed up, I trust no one.
That's right. And it's funny because, like, the game's built to, like, fall apart.
Yeah.
And so it might not even be anybody. We all just be pointing fingers for no reason.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
but
no, excellent game. We've reviewed it. Go back and listen to it.
For sure.
But yeah, it falls under the same category. And I think that one's another one of that's top tier as well.
So the last one we've mentioned multiple times already, but we'll go ahead and talk about it now. Blood on the Clock Tower. This is a overproduced, super expensive, hard to find, very cool retheming rebuild of Werewolf, where everyone has a role. There's specific roles that are tied into different builds of that particular experience. And it very much falls in this is just a social deduction game. And there are the teams that are trying to do the different things for them to be able to win. And you're trying to figure out who's who and how to get out. Usually the games I've been involved in, each round has lots of discussion, usually within like mini groups of the major group. And there's lots of negotiating and discussing and trying to piece all the different things together. Because one of the things Blood on the Clock Tower really like tries to emphasize is chaos. And so there's no way, but it's very difficult for you to map everything that's going on. There's just always something in addition to just the lying. There's enough abilities going on that it creates chaos.
Right.
And so I have played multiple of the, I guess you'd call them scenarios. I don't know that they all play evenly. Like, I think one definitely leans more chaotic, whereas one might be a little bit more straightforward in the genre. So there's that. But that is like the up-to-date social deduction game if you wanted to go all out and try this thing out. But again, it's hard to find and it's super expensive. I mean, it's crazy. It's got this big, massive tome. And when you open it up, it's like a way to map where everybody's at around the circle and all the different things that are going on.
Is it printed? Like, or is it just out of print?
I think it goes in and out of print a lot. And once it comes back in print, it goes out of print. Gotcha. Actually, on their website, let me see before I... You can buy the game for $160.
Wow.
So, currently low stock in the U.S.
What's in there that makes it that much money? That seems like a lot. But like, it's just cardboard, isn't it? And cards?
It's really the demand.
I guess there's books and stuff.
No, it's 100% the demand for the game that makes it that. I mean,
there's just a lot of tokens. Like, there's a lot of tokens.
Yep.
That's crazy. I mean, it's a really good game, but
yeah,
that's a lot of money.
You
might want to just find somebody that has it already.
It's interesting, right? Because like, if you have a group that all plays this game, then you could split it because you don't all need a copy of this game.
Sure.
So that's one way to look at it, I guess.
That's an expensive game, man. That's crazy, but it is excellent. And so I guess we'll talk about that. I've played this game once. I thought it does an excellent job of having these, like you said, these abilities. And you can get abilities throughout the game and like things like that as well. You have these events as in like, it's kind of like this story as well. I think it's excellent in that it takes, like you said, Werewolf to this whole other level. Werewolf, throughout the process of everything, like with the Ultimate Edition, you had all these abilities. I think this does it better. Because you have this story and you have a way to quickly give people abilities and you have regular townsfolks as well. Like, you have the normal werewolf situation, but now you're gaining stuff as the games go on. And the rounds, generally, like, you can play multiple rounds, I think a little bit potentially faster, depending on the situation. Maybe it was the game that we were playing. It picked up quickly. But I do like how, specifically in Blood on the Clock Tower, when you're dead, you're not out of the game. You have a valuable vote that you can save and use.
Yep.
I think
that's you're also part of the discussion still.
Always part of the conversation. I think, honestly, like, those aspects could be applied to Werewolf and be used in a
Some of them
a
can.
Situation.
Yeah. The things that I've learned, there's certain things that they've cleaned up that Werewolf is really bad about that you could implement in Werewolf. But there's also certain things like they just do a better job of putting together a group of characters instead of you just trying to put it together more or less yourself in Werewolf. Yeah. Now, I know there's a point system. It's not perfect in Werewolf.
Sure.
But the thing you can't re-implement is there's certain things that happen behind the scenes that you don't know about, that you don't have to announce like you do in Werewolf, that it's just impossible to recreate. I also think that the characters are better done in Blood on the Clock Tower overall.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I obviously don't own it, so I wouldn't spend $160 for the enhancements that it gives.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't ever plan on owning it. So no. I have Werewolf. I mean, if I ever have to pull it out, I'll use that, which I guess, do we need to talk about Werewolf?
So I think I want to have we're already way high on time. So
yeah.
I do want to have a time to discuss, though. It's very ironic. We're going to have a long episode when we're talking about social deduction games. I have seen a lot of things come out of these games from an emotional standpoint, from a way that people respond to each other shortly thereafter and even longer, depending on what happens in the game. I mean, because there is lying and there is emotions that run high and you're having to stay in this narrative, whatever it may be, for a significant amount of time. And there are people that are directly confronting you and it could be easily interpreted as attacking you. And so I just wanted to discuss like things to be aware of if you're a newer player and you're thinking about getting into one of these games. some things to look out for, because I don't think, for whatever reason, this genre gets a pass on a lot of things that we don't say is that we say is not acceptable at the table in other forms of gaming. And I don't understand that. So anyways, so that's just me throwing it out there. Because, you know, with Werewolf, and if you don't understand, I kind of hit me halfway through. We didn't really ever talk about how to play Werewolf if you never played. But Werewolf, there's werewolves and there's townsfolk at its basic form.
Yeah.
You are assigned this secretly at the beginning of a game by a card. The card tells you what you are and what you do. And if you are a werewolf, what's going to happen? The moderator, who doesn't actually play the game, just kind of runs the game, will tell everybody to go to sleep. We'll have the moderator or have the werewolf wake up. They'll decide who they want to kill. And we'll go through a series of actions, depending on who's in the game. Wake up, find out that person's dead. And then the townspeople all get upset, discuss who they're going to vote off in hopes that you figure out who the werewolf is and vote them off.
Exactly.
That's a very basic snippet of it. But obviously, there's a lot more to it than that once you start getting into the actual discussions.
Yeah. Yeah, then you have that social element of trying to accuse people and see how they react and figure out who's who based off, you know, can you pin them in a corner and and trying to get them to confess in a way. So, overall, I mean, yes, there are things you're always watching out for in these games. I think some people don't do well in these large groups, and then they don't do well with, you know, trying to lie and also figure out who's lying. There are people that just aren't good at that. And so, like, that type of experience overall, any of these games, probably not for you. Maybe some of the little, maybe the early ones we talked about. But I think overall, like, you know, it is group dependent. Some games of Werewolf have been excellent and some haven't because of the group specifically. Yep. And so it does matter on the group and who's playing and who's kind of guiding that process. And obviously your moderator is huge. You know, I tend to think that I'm a good moderator, but I think you are superb at being the moderator in a game. And so I think having a good moderator, and especially Werewolf, Blood on the Clock Tower, games like that are incredibly valuable and
it's
really
important.
Make the game what it is. Like the people, the group obviously it's dependent on that as well. You need a good moderator to kind of kickstart the game. Within all that, I think obviously I still have Werewolf and I have The Ultimate Werewolf by Bezier Games, and I keep that around for large groups and large events because I think there's not any other games that do it like that. I mean, we talked about Blood on the Clock Tower, but as far as a quick, you know, box that's cheap, you know, that has some cards and keeps everything in this, I think this is top tier elite status. They could play over 15-20 people, and you know, it is a time commit, I guess, in a way, but like if you have a large party, people could still have their snacks and drinks and kind of hang out and sit down. And yeah, like generally you're, you know, focused on the game, but like you could still, you know, kind of hang out. And especially if you die, you can kind of walk away and go talk and be with other people. And so it's a group event that works really well, obviously, with the large party. And it's fun. Like it's a good experience and people always have a fun time trying to figure out who's who. So.
But I do think, like, there are some things to be aware of. Like, you've got to not take things personally in these games.
Absolutely.
You can't. But on the flip side of that, you've got to remember to stay, like, you're still talking to a real human being instead of, like, just this character that you're trying to figure out. And I don't know, our last Blood on the Clock Tower experience, like, there was one guy in particular, and this is a big group, mind you, and it's a group that doesn't know each other very well. Like, there was a lot of people from lots of different walks of life.
Yeah.
And we all kind of got together for this one thing. And so we, you know, this one guy organized it. He knew several of us or whatever, and it became a thing. But this guy that was playing, you know, he got very frustrated during the game and started getting very loud and almost ugly with the way that he was talking to people. And I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, we're not playing. This isn't a game anymore. Like we're actually getting upset with each other.
Yeah.
And that happens way too often in these games. So I think that's something, you know, it's almost like when I sit down to play D&D, we have a session zero is what it's called, where you kind of lay up the groundwork and these are the ground rules of how we're going to play. this is everybody's equal understanding. And if we're not on the same page, we need to figure it out before we get started so that we can be like, all right, now that we're on the same page, now we play.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, man. Like, some of these games get ugly.
Yeah. I mean, people are competitive, but then you're also talking about like convincing somebody of your opinion.
Yep.
And convincing somebody to believe you if and then you're getting accused. These are all like possible motivations to get upset.
Well, and the wild thing is like when you are sure you're right and I'm sure I'm right and neither of us have any information to contradict what we believe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so because there isn't any.
Exactly.
And that any that somebody is willing to share because then it would reveal something about their character and in the game. And so, yeah, no, it could be a potentially hostile environment and you got to be careful and it's got to be the group dependent. But I think the moderator should do, that's his job to keep everything at bay. And so those are definitely things to keep in mind on. I mean, obviously, like, if you just aren't interested or don't enjoy, you know, that type of large game where you are, like, you really do need to be paying attention to what everybody's doing and
yes.
saying. And if you're not really interested to participate in that and, you know, that stresses you out and you just don't enjoy even having that type of event or being participating in that, yeah. then I would stay away from those games. And because those are things you have to do and you end up getting frustrated and not having fun if you don't do those things. If you're not paying attention to what people are saying and, you know, kind of paying attention to the layout of the table, so to speak, of the room, then you're not going to do well and somebody's going to accuse you of being suspicious and you'll get knocked out very quickly.
Right.
And so it is important to maintain, you know, paying attention to what other people are doing and using that to your advantage to stay in the game. Those are all things that are valuable in what makes good players good, and the subpar players just kind of move on to another game. and that's what people get frustrated about is because yeah. you have some people that are interested and some people that aren't.
Yeah, that's very true. And there is a skill level to this, too.
Like, absolutely.
It's not like if you're trying this out for the first time or whatever, like you cannot expect to be very good at this the first time. I've seen so many groups fall flat because they get to that first next day after somebody's died and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do this. And it's not because they don't understand the rules. It's because it's like, okay, now what do we do? And there has to be a intentionality to learn how to work your way through those conversations.
Yeah.
And there has to be grace in that because it's something that you're learning how to lie, and you're learning how to lie within this little fantasy world where you're given limited information. And that's just, it's tough. I mean, it's not easy, especially for these longer games.
Yeah.
Cause that emotion and that weight does carry and it keeps going. And you're like, gosh, I've committed 2 hours of my life to this. Like, I need to make sure it shows up the right way.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
No, those are all valuable points. And I guess even with all that, it's still a fantastic experience at the table. I remember some of my more fun gaming moments in history are around a werewolf game of some kind because it's just so fun when, you know, they pull off, like, usually when the werewolves get away with it at the very end. That's always an experience. It's just fun. And so it does take a lot of effort, and they are good players. And, you know, when you moderate a lot of games, you figure out what works and what doesn't. So I consider myself an okay game player. But as you and I both know, everybody accuses us to be the werewolves in every game that we play.
Yeah.
And so we get knocked out very early in every game, which is why I don't tend to play it a lot, because I think it's that aspect, if you know what's happening in this game, you have to be a werewolf. And so I was like, I'll just be the bot.
Yeah, I don't even know that it's a you have to be the werewolf, but there's a chance you're the werewolf, and yeah. I don't want that threat in the game.
Exactly. They're like, so, we got to get rid of Jared.
Every time, dude. Turn
and
one.
And I also do that as well. I say we got to get rid of Jared.
You do. I get it. Like, I mean, not to be whatever, but I understand that in most groups that I play this, like, I am the threat. I'm the game guy, and that's fine.
Exactly. But that's not how it works.
That's why I moderate. Like, I'm just like, hey, guys, I'll run this game. Like, I get more enjoyment out of moderating these games at this point than I do playing.
No, I do as well. Because, I think moderating. Yeah, it's more fun for me anyway. So,
but I will push back on what you just said a minute ago, because I need people to understand. You don't have to like these games. If you're bad at lying and you're bad at interacting with people, you're never going to like these games. I need that to be perfectly clear because I think a lot of people don't understand that. This is not for everybody.
Yeah.
No game is for everybody.
That's
and
right.
So if you don't like lying, if you don't like sitting there and having to have conversations, I'm not saying you have to be loud. I'm not saying you have to talk over everybody all the time. In fact, I would discourage that. I would encourage respect and aggressive, respectful conversation. But if you're just going to sit there and never say anything and never participate, you will never find these awesome moments that Ian's talking about. It just won't happen because it requires a commitment and engagement.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I do think there, what's funny enough is I think just a little bit of engagement, people have a lot of fun.
Yes.
As long as you're like willing to commit to that experience. I've known people that have been, one is a werewolf because they didn't talk a lot. They talked when they needed to talk.
That's perfect.
And they kind of hid in the corner and nobody thought they were a werewolf. So as long as you're willing to commit to the experience and you're okay with,
that's
you know,
it.
Just doing a little bit of, you know, diverting people's attention at times and that's okay with you and you're not going to, you know, it's not going to freak you out. You'll have fun with this game.
Yep. That's fair. I mean, I just, whether it's this or, you know, Cash and Guns or whatever kind of game that involves like actual group participation, I've seen all too often, like you'll watch one group play it and it's like the most amazing thing. Everybody's laughing, having a great time, getting all, you know, everybody's into it. And then the very next group will walk up, falls flat.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what happened? Well, it depends on the group.
Yeah,
and it depends on how interested the group is in playing this game.
It's a social experiment / deduction. So,
yeah,
that's how these games go.
It's crazy. It's fun. All right. You got anything else?
Nah, I think we talked about a lot of the games. We've mentioned a lot of games that we didn't fully go into detail. I think they're all great. You know, we talked a little bit about Resistance as well. Like, you know, we didn't do a deep dive on that, but that's another
that's
one
great.
That's similar. And I think all of these are just really fun, in my opinion. Like, it's not something I want to play all the time.
Sure.
And it's not something that I honestly, I feel bad because I just don't want to invite 10 people over because I know that I have to play games like this. Yeah, I know unless I have other teachers amongst my group, which makes it really hard because you're like, well, I just, you know, I got too many people, but these games fit that many people. And so it is an aspect that there's not another category of game that fits this many. Like 8+, 10+. There's just not many board games, card games that fit that many people. And so this is a needed genre. We need more games that, you know, aren't just werewolf knockoffs. I think we need some, you know, the other games that do similar things here. And I think the games we mentioned are all good, and even though some of them are older, I still think they stand the test of time. As we're still talking about it, so they definitely stand the test of time, and I've still enjoyed them.
For sure.
And I think those are all valuable games in a collection. I think each have their place, and I think there's an opportunity for more games in this genre to come about soon. I think it's needed. But overall, I still think all these games we talked about are still, you know, many of them are in my collection for a reason.
Agreed, man. I mean, I love the quick ones. I still, you know, sometimes I'm like, I could break out Coup. I'd enjoy that.
Coup's good.
Yeah, things like that. I mean, the werewolf games, I'll moderate a game for you, whoever the you is, anytime you want. It's
absolutely.
But really, at this point, like, it's going to require me being able to assess that it's a good, like, well-knowledged group before I'm willing to jump in and play.
Yeah.
Because if it's a group that I'm, like, kind of showing, I'm just going to run it. Because otherwise, it's going to be a really bad experience for me, which is fine. I get it. Like, I don't take it personally. Like, I get it. I would vote me out, too, if I was, you know, one of the 20 people I was showing for the first time.
Exactly.
So, I get it. But, all right. Well, listeners, thank you so much. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website, thegametailpodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametailpodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for our cover art, and to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music. Join us next week as we head over somewhere. I think we're back to the kids' table, if I remember correct. It's the kids' table. Thanks, Jared. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
That's right. Don't trust anyone.
I don't.
But trust everyone.
I don't.